You can't be neutral on the moving train, I told y'all before. You can't believe everything that your teacher tell you. Who was your teacher? Your teacher just learned what they was taught. How do you know what they was taught was correct? Yeah, I mean, dig into the real history of this country and the fact that it was built on blood. You can't be neutral on a moving train, 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 train.
Welcome to You Can't Be Neutral, a political podcast inspired by Howard Zinn and progressive and radical activism, taking a look at society, media, and politics. You can find out more at youcan'tbeneutral.com. You find a link there to send me a message and a link there to make a donation. You can make a one-time or recurring donation to keep this podcast free and independent. And this episode will feature two pieces published by the Lemkin Institute for Genocide Prevention, which you can find at lemkininstitute.com. First up, from April 13, 2024, Statement on the Western Media Narrative Regarding Israel's Genocide in Gaza. The Lemkin Institute for Genocide Prevention condemns the misleading framing in the Western media's coverage of Israel's bombardment and genocide of the Palestinian people. Since this latest cycle of attacks on Gaza began in October 2023, the narrative most prominent in Western media has been that Israel is exercising its right to self-defense. There has been little analysis of what the right to self-defense allows and little challenge of Israel's justifications for the IDF's indiscriminate bombing of civilian areas or its responsibility for humanitarian crises, including famine and water shortages throughout the enclave. Although this spin is beginning to shift with the recent apparent targeted killing of international humanitarian workers employed by World Central Kitchen, the Lemkin Institute views the cause for this shift to be indicative of the broader failure of Western journalism to provide an accurate picture of what's happening in Israel-Palestine. Since October 7, major news outlets have framed Israel's campaign solely as a reaction to the attacks carried out by Hamas last year, failing to contextualize Israel's actions within its complex history of settler colonization and military occupation, as well as the consistent and widespread dehumanization, criminalization, and dispossession of Palestinians by the Israeli state and society. The Western press should focus more accurately on Israel's indiscriminate bombing of residential and civilian infrastructure and its efforts to block aid and withhold basic necessities, including life-saving medical supplies, without justifications and framings that appear aimed at mollifying the Israeli authorities. The danger of repeatedly framing the Israeli campaign as a legitimate self-defense response to the attacks carried out by Hamas on 7 October is twofold. One, it serves to misinform the reader that the root cause of Israel's violence is Hamas, and two, it diverts attention away from the tens of thousands of victims of the ongoing genocide. While the events of 7 October cannot be ignored when understanding what has prompted Israel's actions, very rarely do Western outlets present the current bombardment as what it is, the latest development in decades of physical and structural violence against Palestinians that is tied to a greater effort to claim more Palestinian land for Jewish settlement. Even in the age of social media, the traditional press does much to shape public opinion, and it is therefore crucial that reporting does not fail to touch on the many bombardments of Gaza that take place year in and year out, the brutal blockade of Gaza for over 15 years, and the roots of the Palestinian struggle for self-determination. Indeed, the Western media narrative aids in legitimizing Israel's campaign in Gaza, framing the genocide as a conflict or war in which two equal sides are fighting, one with criminal terrorist intentions and the other with the noble goal of self-defense. For example, the BBC article from 13 February 2024, quote, "What is Hamas and why is it fighting with Israel in Gaza?" opens with an explanation of how the quote war began. when Israel suffered, quote, the deadliest attack in its history from Gaza. The article occludes the underlying root causes of the assault on 7 October. It instead solely positions Israel as a victim, which only serves to justify its ongoing persecution, abuse, and occupation of Palestinian civilians. The reader is constantly reminded of who is to blame for the current state of affairs, an organization operating out of Gaza and apparently embedded in every single structure in the territory, with little to no reference as to how the situation transpired, its historical context, or the ongoing Israeli war crimes and human rights violations. The Western media rhetoric goes beyond avoiding the historical context and extends as far as shifting responsibility away from the state of Israel for the atrocities it is committing against the Palestinian people. On 14 October 2023, Reuters published an article stating that one of their journalists had been killed by, quote, missile fire from the direction of Israel, but it falls short of naming who might have fired the missiles from that direction. A subsequent investigation by the UN has shown the Reuters team was deliberately targeted by an Israeli tank, an explicit violation of international law. This form of voiding the IDF of any culpability is not a one-off. Indeed, while Western media outlets will often report on the devastation that Gazans are suffering, the rarity with which such reports identify Israel as a perpetrator is shocking. While much of the readership will be aware that Israel is orchestrating these attacks, this passive voice reporting steers public attention away from the responsible parties towards appeals for aid and charity. Such appeals, of course, are not inherently undesirable from a genocide prevention standpoint. However, by refusing to label Israel as the aggressor, the coverage does not portray the systemic destruction and persecution carried out by the IDF, and in doing so, obscures the genocidal intent behind its actions. Framing of this sort reduces the degree to which states will be held accountable for their actions. It also ensures that the public will remain ignorant of the relevant international law, Israel's violations of which have been documented by many reputable agencies. The disorienting effect of describing Palestinian victimization without identifying their persecutor is amplified by the media's aforementioned insistence on reiterating the centrality of 7 October in this, quote, conflict. Floods of articles and headlines impart the message that innocent Palestinians are starving and dying from a conflict that, it must be emphasized, began with Hamas's unprecedented levels of violence against Israelis 6 months ago and is therefore the sole responsibility of Hamas. This message of ultimate culpability, with little to no mention of the nation responsible for said starvation and death, has saturated the minds of the Western world for half a year and diverts attention away from the condemnation of genocidaires and those who fund and supply them. It further amplifies IDF messaging at the expense of Palestinians' legitimate grievances and international law. Palestinians are often reported to, quote, have died, quote, been displaced, or, quote, suffered from food and water shortages. They are rarely reported to have been killed, forcibly removed, or starved to death by Israel. Western outlets have tended to present the plight of the Palestinian citizenry within this framework. Passive suffering that must be dealt with via the provision of aid and humanitarian assistance, with little consistent mention of what governments can or should do to end their suffering by compelling the termination of Israel's campaign. For example, the most recent coverage of Gaza has focused extensively on U.S. projects to drop aid into the enclave and build a pier for delivery by sea. These BBC articles from March 2024 provide overviews of the air and sea aid programs headed by the U.S., but do little to inform readers on Israel erecting barriers to humanitarian aid in the first place. While the BBC explains the difficulties in dropping aid from the sky, it fails to mention the key challenge that aid groups are facing, Israel's blockade of land entry points into Gaza. Pier proposals find themselves on the docket because of Israel's blockade of the Gaza Strip, which is rarely cited as a prominent barrier for aid organizations to overcome. Reporting on airdrops and the floating pier is essential. Nevertheless, coverage is incomplete if it fails to stress that such measures are required because Israel refuses to let aid in through conventional routes. In a similar vein, a March 2024 article from the Washington Post refers to how, quote, disruptions at border crossings have mired the attempts of aid convoys, but does not condemn Israel for causing said disruptions. A choice of words that does little to shed light on the systematic, intentional actions of Israel to inflict further suffering on the Palestinian people. An NBC article from the same week states that Israel has been, quote, accused of opening fire on a crowd of Palestinians, while failing to mention that airdrops are needed solely due to Israeli obstructions of aid. The article uses passive voice concerning Israeli crimes while consistently refusing to address or outright ignoring claims made against Israel by Palestinians that investigators have corroborated. In December 2023, CNN reporter Clarissa Ward became the first journalist to gain access to Gaza, quote, since war began, and documented the ongoing operations in a field hospital in Rafah. The report does well in capturing the terrible conditions Palestinians have been enduring for 60 days at the time of filming, but again suffers from the same shortcoming, framing the active persecution of Palestinians as a passive condition of suffering, for which the panacea is a provision of aid in improving medical infrastructure. Ward interviews doctors who described how overcrowded the hospital is and the necessity to improve surgical solutions due to limited resources. But the report does not go beyond this to emphasize that Israel has blocked the delivery of medical supplies and bombed hospitals to the extent that they are no longer usable. Rather chillingly, a closing remark of the report is that, quote, Gaza will go down as one of the great horrors of modern warfare. Despite Ward's honorable and fact-based depiction of the suffering of the Palestinian people, the final takeaway reverts to the concept of war, again tacitly legitimizing the efforts of Israel in the, quote, all-or-nothing paradigm it has chosen as it attempts to thwart Hamas. Western journalists simply framing Israel's bombardment of Gaza as a systematic, targeted persecution of Palestinians, however, will not be enough. Within their coverage, they must explicitly point to the use of language by senior Israeli officials that signals the genocidal intent of their actions. Both Le Monde and CNN reported on Israel's defense minister, Yoav Gallant, describing Hamas as, quote, animals in October 2023, as he announced the, quote, complete siege on Gaza, cutting off electricity, food, water, and gas to the enclave. It is vital that these words are reported to the readers across the world. However, equally important is that the significance of a state's defense minister using such language is not lost on the readership. While Hamas must be condemned, reducing them to the level of animals for abuses that IDF soldiers are also committing, and at much higher levels, serves as a preemptive justification for the onslaught against all Gazans that followed. The use of dehumanizing language is itself often a genocidal call for elimination, giving the IDF license to carry out an indiscriminate campaign of relentless bombing of houses, hospitals, schools, universities, and mosques. The use of genocidal language by state leaders must be explained in Western reporting with a contextualization that dehumanizing language often is a call for genocide. Otherwise, reporting risks skewing the reader's interpretation of dehumanizing language as legitimate in this instance, as legal, or as mere colorful rhetoric from a single speaker. This framing of genocidal language again portrays Israel's actions as proportionate, legitimate, and just. The shortcomings of Western press reporting on Israel are clear, and the Lemkin Institute, in response, calls upon media outlets to strive to present the Israeli campaign in its full historical context, most recently characterized by the relentless persecution and dehumanization of Palestinians that displays a clear genocidal intent. Western readers must not misunderstand the IDF's actions to be a proportionate retaliation to the attacks carried out by Hamas on 7 October. The international law on this is clear, and news outlets have more than a handful of legal authorities to refer to when framing articles in more accurate and fair ways. Instead, it is imperative that media reporting reflect the systematic decimation of Palestinians that is taking place under the guise of Israeli national security. Journalists cannot neglect the importance of their role in elucidating the IDF's actions in Gaza. It is crucial that they comprehensively refute the notion that Israel is engaging in a, quote, war in which they have shown regard for either civilian life or the prospect of peace. Where heads of state have fallen short, the media must continually strive to keep genocidaires in check, providing accurate and reliable reporting that refuses to take a, quote, impartial stance on crimes against humanity. For 2 years, Western coverage has drawn parallels between Putin's campaign in Ukraine and that of Hitler across Europe in the 1930s, an analogy used to anchor the reader's understanding of Putin's actions in relation to the Holocaust, which undoubtedly shapes readers' opinions. Such analogies, denoting the risks of appeasement in the face of genocide, are not utilized when reporting on Israel. As a result, the media continues to find itself complicit in failing to address the reality of Israel's crimes. The Western reader has been misled by the media over the course of the siege, with shockingly few Westerners aware of its true scale. The Lemkin Institute urges the media to abandon rhetoric actively shielding Israel from crimes against the people of Palestine, and to go further than reporting on the atrocities as necessary evils by recognizing the binding nature of international law. In particular, news outlets must devote significant attention to stressing the dangers of senior ministers dehumanizing their enemies lest they be complicit in normalizing mass atrocity around the world. We call on the Western media to review editorial guidelines to ensure that their reporting shows an appreciation for the binding nature of international law. And the second piece from the Lemkin Institute is published on April 8, 2024. Israel is committing genocide across Palestine. Active genocide alert condemning ongoing violence in the West Bank. The Lemkin Institute is horrified by the dire situation transpiring in the West Bank during what has already been a devastating 6 months of conflict in Gaza. The Israeli military and far-right settlers have used the cover of war to conduct continuous attacks on Palestinians in the West Bank, often leading to death and forced displacement. These attacks have been underreported in the mainstream Western press, which has also failed to tie Israel Defense Force, IDF, and settler violence in the West Bank and East Jerusalem to the genocide being committed in Gaza. These processes are all a part of an overwhelming push on the part of Israeli authorities to oust Palestinians from their remaining ancestral lands. In other words, Israel is committing genocide against Palestinians across Palestine. With international eyes on Gaza, Israeli military forces continue a campaign of genocide and unprecedented violence in the West Bank. The targeting of Palestinians has largely gone unchecked by media coverage or public diplomatic intervention. Before the events of 7 October and Israel's ensuing response, violence in the West Bank was already on pace to eclipse that of any year on record, with Israeli military forces killing roughly 200 Palestinians in the West Bank in the first 9 months of 2023, more than in any year recorded since the UN began tracking annual Palestinian fatalities in 2005. In the months following 7 October, state-sanctioned violence targeting Palestinians in the West Bank has been at an all-time high. On pace to shatter previous records, the past 5 months have been marked by thousands of arrests, hundreds of killings, and forced evictions of Palestinians, which have reached levels that can only be understood as a campaign seeking to rid whole sections of the West Bank of Palestinians. In only 3 months from 7 October to 27 December 2023, the Israeli military and illegal settlers killed at least 300 Palestinians in the West Bank, including 76 children, dwarfing the previous high of 154 in all of 2022. According to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Israeli forces killed 509 Palestinians in total during 2023 in the West Bank, with over 350 deaths occurring from October 2023 to January 2024 alone. Throughout 2023, at least 4,000 Palestinian civilians in the West Bank were forced from their homes, had their properties demolished, or were otherwise forcibly displaced. Across Palestinian land in 2023, Israel forces demolished or forced Palestinians to destroy over 1,100 structures. Of the more than 4,000 Palestinians forcibly displaced in 2023, 2,246 Palestinians, including 1,039 children, were displaced in this manner. Hundreds of these demolitions occurred in East Jerusalem. Palestinians are frequently forced or coerced to destroy their own property following continuous threats from Israeli authorities, with the demolitions undertaken in fear of retribution and arrest by Israeli forces. Not only have regular Israeli soldiers conducted demolitions, but armed Israeli settlers have forced out whole communities from their ancestral homes. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs has highlighted such evictions at the hands of settlers. Quote, shortly after armed Israeli settlers threatened to kill them if they did not leave, 24 Palestinian households, totaling 141 people, half of whom are children, were displaced from Kirbat Zanuda in the southern West Bank. On 28 October 2023, the families dismantled about 50 residential and animal structures and vacated the area with their 5,000 livestock. UN Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. Kirbat Zanuda is not an exception, but the blueprint. Prior to its residents fleeing for their lives, the village was attacked by armed Israeli settlers on three occasions between 7 October and 28 October, when the Palestinian residents fled. Forcing people from their homes without cause, whether by expulsion or by other coercive acts, can amount to crimes against humanity, war crimes, or both. These acts can also amount to genocide if the intent is to destroy an identity in whole or in part. For years, Israel has undertaken an explicit policy to, quote, Judaize East Jerusalem by evicting longtime Palestinian residents and placing Jewish settlers in their homes. Since 7 October, this effort has been rejuvenated by the far-right settler government. The state-led effort, supported by Netanyahu's administration, seeks to establish Jewish-only communities within existing Palestinian neighborhoods, such as Shejara, Silwan, and the Muslim quarter of the Old City. According to the Israeli investigative newspaper Haaretz, the construction of Jewish-only neighborhoods would include the redeployment of armored vehicles, access roads, often only accessible to Jewish residents and settlers, facial recognition technology, and a perimeter fence. Forced demolition and evictions in East Jerusalem reached an unprecedented level in 2023. Last year alone, Israeli forces demolished or forced Palestinian owners to demolish 220 structures, forcibly displacing 597 Palestinians. Both numbers are the highest on record since the recording of such numbers began in 2009. 2023 was also a year that saw the most violent and destructive Israeli raids in cities, towns, and refugee camps in the West Bank, namely Jenin, Nur Shams, and Tulkarem, since 2009. From 2009 to 2022, Israeli forces destroyed 27 structures during military operations in the West Bank, resulting in the displacement of 86 Palestinians. This past year saw one of the most dramatic spikes in IDF incursions into the West Bank. During solely military operations in 2023, Israeli forces demolished 222 structures. The destruction caused by the IDF during incursions into the West Bank led to the forcible displacement of 921 Palestinians, accounting for nearly a quarter of all those displaced in 2023. The number of structures destroyed does not account for roads, wastewater facilities, and urban infrastructure destroyed by Israeli military vehicles, such as that seen in Jenin. forced evictions, home demolitions, and the destruction of homes and businesses during military operations are tangible results of Israeli policy that show little to no regard for the lives and well-being of Palestinians in the West Bank. The visible arm of the Israeli state is ever present in the West Bank, from its array of checkpoints strategically placed to complicate the movement of Palestinians throughout the West Bank, its defense of illegal settlements, and the consistent raids by the Israeli military into towns, villages, and refugee camps throughout the West Bank. However, violence wrought against Palestinians does not stop with the Israeli military. Illegal Israeli settlers in the West Bank have been the vanguard for forcibly displacing entire Palestinian villages and towns. Of the thousands of Palestinians displaced in 2023, Israeli settler violence is directly responsible for the forced evictions and displacement of 1,539 Palestinians. Most Palestinians who left their homes, many of which had been in their families for generations, did so due to increased settler violence and shrinking land to graze animals. Those forced from their homes in 2023 due to settler violence are nearly double that of the number in 2022, when 774 Palestinians were forced from their homes by settler violence. Further indicative of a connection between Israel's genocide in Gaza and its aims in the West Bank is the fact that the bulk of settler violence targeting Palestinians has come after 7 October. Emboldened by Israel's eliminationist approach to its war on Gaza, Israeli settlers have evicted over 1,200 Palestinians from their homes since 7 October alone. This number accounts for 81% of all those forcibly removed from their homes by settler violence. More often than not, settlers are backed directly by the Israeli military. At best, the Israeli military is conveniently absent when settler violence occurs and is often unwilling or unable to search for and bring perpetrators to justice. According to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, 14 Palestinian communities were depopulated entirely by Israeli military or settler forces, with the Israeli army demolishing the remaining structures. In addition to forced displacement and killing, Israel has also used administrative detention to threaten the collective life of Palestinians and force them to leave. This form of harassment and criminalization of an entire population rarely breaks into the international news. Administrative detention is one of the more controversial aspects of Israeli occupation in the West Bank. The law supporting administrative detentions is a holdover law from the time of the British Mandate in Palestine. It allows Israeli military forces to detain any Palestinian for 6 months to a year without charge, trial, or appeal. Living under military occupation in the West Bank, Palestinians have little recourse but to petition the Supreme Court for family members and administrative detention. This is often futile. Israeli authorities use administrative detention in such a manner that in a 2012 European Parliament report, the practice was referred to as being used, quote, principally to constrain Palestinian political activism. Later in 2020, the UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights in the Occupied Palestinian Territories, OPT, called administrative detention, quote, an anathema in any democratic society that follows the rule of law. At the time in 2020, over 300 Palestinians were being held without charge in administrative detention. According to the Palestinian Prisoners Society, an NGO that works with families of those detained, the number of Palestinians detained in administrative detention is nearly 3,500 people, including women and children. Palestinians held in Israeli jails rarely receive medical attention or adequate food and water. Dozens of released detainees have attested to rampant abuse and torture while detained, including sexual violence. To date, since 7 October, 8 Palestinians have died in Israeli jails, likely at the hands of their captors or due to extreme neglect. In addition to killing, forced displacement, and administrative detention, Israel is also pursuing acts of cultural genocide against Palestinians. For example, a report released by the UN in November 2023 calls for the protection of olive trees and Palestinian farmers, highlighting that olives in the West Bank have been going unharvested, quote, due to unprecedented threats to olive farmers and their livelihoods. This destruction is a continuation of Israel's ongoing taking, uprooting, and burning of olive groves by settlers and Israeli authorities. Specifically, since 1976, Israeli authorities and settlers have uprooted 800,000 olive trees in the occupied West Bank. While olives are the largest single agricultural product in the West Bank, sustaining Palestine's economy and individual livelihoods, these trees are also at the heart of Palestinian culture. Without having access to the trees, Palestinian farmers are deprived of a harvest season that is traditionally, quote, a special and joyful time for Palestinians, with families and communities singing and sharing food. Palestinians hold a deep-rooted connection with olive trees, many of which are ancient, as they connect Palestinians to their identity and homeland. Palestinian farmer Mafoda Shtaye conveys this deep connection, explaining that, quote, I felt like I was hugging my child. I raised the tree like my child. Ultimately, the targeting of olive trees contributes to the cultural genocide of Palestinians as the trees, quote, lie at the heart of Palestinian culture, history, its economy, and identity. A slow structural genocide targeting Palestinians in the West Bank has been in place for decades. It is now escalating against the backdrop of the genocide in Gaza. The Lemkin Institute has been consistent in labeling Israel's war on Gaza as genocidal and in pointing out the genocidal structure dynamics of Israel's occupation of Palestinian lands. It is misleading to separate the Israeli campaign in Gaza from its actions in the West Bank. The tactics employed by Israel in both locations are part of the same eliminationist genocidal campaign. The Lemkin Institute condemns all efforts to persecute, arrest, forcibly displace, and kill Palestinians. We further condemn the destruction of important symbols of Palestinian collective and transgenerational life, such as olive trees. We call on our fellow human rights organizations to recognize the policies implemented in Gaza as a larger, more intense version of the same policy in the West Bank, depopulating Palestinian towns and villages and replacing Palestinian localities with Jewish-only communities to create a permanent Jewish majority from the river to the sea. We call on the United States, the United Nations, and NGOs around the globe to join our recognition of Israeli efforts in the West Bank as genocidal. The Lemkin Institute calls on states and companies around the world to pressure Israel to engage in genuine peace negotiations, including by threat of sanctions and withdrawal of military aid. We remind everyone that states and private entities found to aid or abet actors perpetrating genocide may find themselves liable to prosecution for complicity under the Genocide Conventions. And that'll just about wrap up this episode of You Can't Be Neutral. For episodes and news about all of my podcasts, follow me in the Fediverse at movingtrainmedia@collectiva.social. You can listen to this and all of my podcasts playing 24/7 at movingtrainradio.com. From the album Thank You Allah, this is the track Palestine Will Be Free by Maher Zain with our moment of Zin. Thanks for listening.
that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
Palestine,